It is our pleasure to bring in a guy, a local guy, the University of Illinois product who refereed in four Super Bowls, Jerry Markbright joining us. Good to
nice
see
to
you,
be
man.
Here. Thank and you. You're almost dressed perfectly.
Yes, almost.
Unfortunately, the stripes on your shirt are only half the size of Ed Hockley's stripes.
Well, that's just because his biceps have stretched him out that wide.
And I'm going to call Ed right after the show and tell him. He may send you a shirt.
Yeah. Once upon a time, not once upon a bagel, but once upon a time, the biceps were as big. These days, I'm not lifting as much. I'd have to stuff a few bagels right in
Maybe
here.
Maybe that's what Ed does. We don't know.
Ed's in the gym right now.
He is, isn't he?
We, you know, so many things we want to talk to you about, Jerry. It's great to have you with us. The work stoppage that is around the corner for NFL officials, it isn't what last year's lockout was in terms of where people are going and how upset they are over this thing. But if this is not rectified, I think there will be an outcry of epic proportion. If people complained about officiating in the past, when they see replacement referees, all hell is going to break loose.
I agree 100%. You know, you have to realize that there is no game if the competitive nature of this game isn't controlled. And the NFL officials, the best in the land, are the ones that control this game. And when you put replacements in there, you're compromising the nature of the game. And that's exactly what the league is planning right now. They've hired 120 replacement officials, none of them from Division I colleges. The colleges and conferences will not allow their officials to work for the National Football League.
Now, this is where things stand as of right now. On the 3rd of June, the NFL locked out the referees, right?
Correct.
The NFL locked them out. And the referees say that the NFL always had this plan and it's just not even bothered to try and actually negotiate a new deal, just locked out so they could lean on the refs.
Well, there hasn't been a negotiating meeting since the 3rd of June. So you take it for what you think it really is. They hired these replacements, started hiring them, long before the talks broke down. So that's the nature of it right now, and they are locked out. There has been no communication from the National Football League officiating department to the officials since June 3rd.
What are the issues between the two sides?
It's contract negotiations.
Mostly, is it cash primarily, or are there other things?
It's dollars. It's also pension. The league wants to freeze the defined benefit pension and stop it and replace it with an alternative IRA defined. With current rates of interest, it would basically shut off the pension plan for officials.
Now, what the other side would argue, that it's not a full-time job, right?
Of course.
They'll lean on you and say, everybody else, Ed Hockley's a lawyer. We know other people have other vocations. So they'll say, this is not a full-time gig. You don't deserve a full-time pension. Is that one of their angles?
Well, it never was before because we always got a full-time pension. I have a full-time pension for my 23 years in the league. The problem is people look at the NFL officials and it's a part-time job. These guys just put their uniform on Sunday and run around like zebras for 3 hours and then go back to real life. The truth is that it's a full-time job for 8 months of the year, masquerading as a part-time job. They study, they look at film, they go to meetings, they are involved all year long. The reason it never was full-time is because it never paid enough money for anyone to support themselves. They had to have other jobs. 20 games a year, they say, well, there's only 20 games a year. They spend 40 hours a week preparing for that game.
That much? 40 hours a week before you even board the plane to go to
the game? Before you get on the plane to go to the game.
Wow. Correct. Is the salary structure for NFL referees and the linesmen, back judges, whatever, is that uniform or is it predicated on years of service?
It's all predicated on years of service. The longer you're in, the greater escalation of pay.
Okay. So what's a Walt Coleman knocking down per annum? Because he's been at it for a while. Is he the highest paid in the league?
Big time.
Yeah?
And so is Ed Hockley.
Well, he should be.
Hockley is the highest. No. If you're in the league for 20 years, you're at this level. If you're in the league for 1 year, you're at the lower level.
Well, don't be bashful, Jerry. Tell us what level. Come on. Approximately.
You know what? I've been out of the game a long time.
Yeah, come on. Enough to pay that 3.8 tax if a guy sells his home under the new Obamacare program? $250,000
Are we talking politics or officiating?
No, I just want to know how much.
Let's go back to gun control.
Let me just say this. I'm going to answer your question.
Okay, please.
The NBA Major League Baseball and hockey, their officials can make up to $400,000 a year. The top salary for an NFL official working the Super Bowl is under $200,000.
If you work all year and the Super Bowl, you still end up under $200,000.
That's correct. We make less than half of what the other sports, and they, of course, call it a part-time job. But it's not. It takes over your life. It's the most important job that you have, even though Ed Hockley probably spends 40 hours a week on football and 20 hours a week on his law practice.
Yeah. And another 60 hours in the gym.
Yep.
Absolutely. Mm. No, but Ed has authored, Ed is the author of a Hopper book, which explains all of the penalty enforcements. He does this on his own dime. He sends it out to every official in the National Football League every year. It's the most complex explanation of a complex rule situation, and he does this. The other officials spend all year working. I mean, it's not just on Sunday.
Right. Do the other leagues consider all of their referees a full-time job?
Yes.
So uniformly, the other three leagues that you mentioned,
yes,
without a doubt, consider them a full-time job. And because you guys have one game a week,
that's correct,
they say no.
However, do you think when you lose two games in the National Football League, they're looking at the stand, well, they're in trouble already. Mm-hmm. You lose 10 games in the baseball season, you can recover and win everything. So our 20 games are like 10 or 12 of the other games. It's that important.
Our guest is Jerry Markbright. We'll get to he wore number 9, by the way, during his 23 years in the National Football League, 11 years in the Big Ten. I want to go over some of his career highlights in a little bit, and we'll welcome some telephone calls in here in just a little bit as well. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. How much do the officials, the ones that we want to see in September, need preseason games?
They need them very badly. You get the kinks out. It's like you haven't worked since last January. You've got to get on the field and get those a few little minor mistakes out of the way. Otherwise, those mistakes are going to occur during the regular season if we come back for the regular season.
Now, forgive me, Jerry, if I've missed the fact that they have actually started to hire these refs, as I've been following the story. Just the other day, I found this memo. I'm sure you've seen the memo where the NFL kind of details the kind of referees they're targeting, and it fits what you described. In the memo, they say they're looking for one, an official who has recently retired from a successful career in college officiating and is still physically able to officiate at a high level of competency.
I know exactly who they're talking about.
They're looking for old retirees who can still run and still look like refs. And number two, lower division college officials, professional league officials, and semi-professional league officials whose window for opportunity for advancement is pretty much closed, but who have the ability to work higher levels but just got overlooked. Boy, that sounds rough. So you're telling me these groups that they're describing have already been hired? They've already got these people gathered and ready to go?
They've already been hired. They've already signed contracts with guaranteed money, and they are frowned upon by officials.
Sure. Because they're scabs, right?
Right. When you're replaced by someone, you have no leverage. They feel that they can get people that are competent enough to work. They're mistaken. They can't. These are not even qualified collegiate officials that are working.
What are they going to screw up? Like the judgment calls on holds, which you guys kind of mess up sometimes too.
It could be anything. Are you saying we make...
Well, see, that's the irony is we rip you guys all year for something here. No, but I mean, what are they going to mess up most of all?
Let me say this.
Yes.
The officials that are the best and that get the best playoff games and everything are those that make the fewest mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
We all make mistakes.
Of course.
Of course.
Forgive my flippancy.
Yeah.
What are they going to mess up?
The likelihood of line of scrimmage mistakes is so evident. Neutral zone infractions, false starts, things like that. They're so technical, and you can't overcall them. You can't undercall them. These are things that are worked on all year long with training films and everything. They're at a clinic right now in Dallas, all the replacements. There is no one there qualified to train them.
Wow.
For the last 13 years, I've been one of 9 trainers. We train our officials. We go to a game every week, and we work with our men to make them better. Red Cashin and I, you remember Red Cashin?
Oh, of course I do.
First down, Red and I.
Don't you all say that?
Red and I.
Give you my Jerry Seaman impersonation next segment.
Ooh, that'll keep him.
Always smiling, exactly. Spalding, number 63 on the offense. What are you smiling about? I bet them. Go ahead.
No.
Where were you? Red Cashin.
Red Cashin and I work the referees. We handle them. And there are trainers for every position. We were asked to work and to train the replacements. We refused. And we were suspended along with the officials. So there is no one there to train them. They're there in Dallas. They'll be trained. And, of course, they'll be able to know the NFL rule book after 2.5-day clinic and a 3-day NFL clinic.
Yeah, that should be fine.
Of course. I've studied the rules my whole life, and I don't know them all.
Wow. You know, I like what you were saying about how the best officials during the season are the ones who get to blow the whistle in January and for the game with Roman numerals on it. And we joke about it on the show a lot, but Ben Finfer, who's back at the shop, and I do have a fondness for it. And when we get to mid-December, we start talking about which officials have earned the right to work the playoffs. Would you be willing to give us your top five in the game, or at least comment on ours as we give it to you in just a few moments here?
I think not.
You don't want to?
I will tell you.
Tony Corrente blows a damn good whistle, doesn't he?
Tony's terrific. I will tell you this: we have 17 referees, head referees. They are all the best in the business. Some are better than others. A few of them are the it guys. In every profession, there's somebody that has it.
Yeah.
You've got the Ed Hockleys. You've got the Terry McCauleys.
Oh, I love number 77. He doesn't need a meeting with the back judge. He shoves him out of the way and says, I'll make the call, fella.
These guys are all top-notch. They can all work everything.
I like Mike Carey. I've long been a Mike Carey guy. But I've really grown to appreciate Award because my partner, as you can tell, is a referee freak. He really is. Not just from the way he's dressed.
I read Jerry's book, the first of three, Born to Referee. By the way, the last one was called Last Call. I think you got one more in you.
Well, my last call.
One more call.
I have to tell you. The reason I wrote that is because the last call was an incorrect holding call.
Oh, that must have.
After 23 years on the field.
That'll eat away
at
you.
They could have given me a pass, but they didn't.
And our producer, Ben Finfer, another big ref guy. Really,
he loves it.
And I think, Finji, Gene Steratore is your guy, right? You're on record with that?
Yeah, he throws the best flag in the league for sure.
Well,
he's good.
He got the Frank Sinatra Award this year.
Tell us about what
that means. Well, he looks like Frank Sinatra.
Oh, he looks like
He sings like Sinatra.
Good name for the award, though.
He's the best-looking referee.
You
with
think
that beautiful hair. Oh, yes.
Mac will work on that for a while.
Best-looking referee. Yeah.
He's also a wonderful referee.
Okay. Well, like you said, they all are. Some better than others. All right, we're going to take a timeout. We'll come back and run some more things by Jerry. Talk about the coin flip in Super Bowl 17. That isn't exactly one of his favorite memories. Jerry was on the field for what many call the greatest game in college football history, the 1966 Michigan State-Notre Dame tilt.
Wow.
The 10-10 tie. Your phone call's coming up this hour of the show is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. It's McNeil and Spiegel on the score.
McNeil and Spiegel Show on 670 The Score.
The referee for today's game is Jerry Marquardt.
Gentlemen, Coach Knoll will flip the coin. This is the head. This is the tail. Who's going to call it? Number 51 is going to call it. Coach, flip it. Heads is the call. It is heads. The Redskins have won the toss.
That, I believe, is Super Bowl 26.
Correct.
Is that that's at the Metrodome. That's Redskins and Bills.
I got that one right.
You got that coin toss right, but that was your third of four Super Bowls worked, if I have the biography committed to memory, and I'm pretty sure I do.
Right.
The first one is Super Bowl 17, right? That's Redskins and Dolphins, and that coin toss, Jerry Marquardt, did not go your way.
You have to bring that up?
I do. Why don't you tell our listeners what happened?
Well, it was simple. I just forgot what was heads and what was tails. So when he called...
Putting that University of Illinois education into work, aren't you?
Was it a confusing coin?
I was so nervous about the toss. The night before, my wife and I would talk. We'd call it the cost of the toin. And I worried about it. And we get out there, and the coin is helmets on one side, heads on the other. And They call tails. The helmets were tails.
How are you supposed
That's
to?
Stupid.
That doesn't make any sense.
It makes you think a little bit, doesn't
when
it?
When I looked at the coin, I saw the helmets,
those,
and
their
I
heads
forgot
inside
they
the
were
helmets.
Tails.
Usually
he
heads
said,
in there.
It's heads, you win the toss. And Elroy Hirsch pulled my shirt, and he said, I think you said the helmets were tails.
You know, Jerry, let me. You're a football fan as well. You have to be doing what you do, but you're working on Sundays. Do you have vivid memories of things that happen in the game in terms of how they swing outcomes of game, or is it just all business and you'd have to go watch it a second time?
No, you focus totally on what you're doing out there on the field. Great plays and things like that you're really not aware of, except if it's in your zone. So
that's too bad, man. Riggins was awesome in Super Bowl 17.
Yeah, I saw him go through the hole, but that was the end of it.
Let's get to some text questions and some of our callers as well. Bandwagon has been in Tinley Park waiting to jump in with former NFL referee, the pride of Skokie, Jerry Markbright. Hello, Bandwagon. You're on the score. Bandwagon, are you with us?
I think he's gone.
He gave up.
We'll
do
go
some
to some
texters.
Our guy Paul Rios wants to know if we could add a little reverb to Jerry's mic so that it sounds like a game situation. A little natural sound in the back and a little reverb.
You want me to call a hold?
Oh, you know what? I really do. As a matter of fact, I'm going to need you. It doesn't have to be right now, but you're going to have to stand up and do some mechanics for us, some actual calling mechanics, because McNeil thinks he knows them really well, but I think there's flaws in the way that he does them.
Well, he's wearing a very famous number. And I could say holding number 85, offense, 10-yard penalty, first down.
How about giving him the business? Could you give us that? Or that's really Ed's
10-yard penalty? I thought it was from the spot of the infraction.
Now, come on.
Mr. Official, let me ask you a question.
Some more text. Will other unions, players union, will other unions have your back and if not full-on walkout, have you had any support from the players' union on this?
We've had verbal support, but they're not going to not play. They are upset, as are the teams and the coaches, but they're not going to do anything about it to back us up.
TKO says, I can't be the only one wondering how replacement refs will affect Vegas. The tenuous sort of, the relationship that the NFL doesn't want to completely own, but of course rules a lot of things. How will that affect
What's Vegas?
McNeil's guy. How will it affect McNeil's guy?
Forget that?
But that's it drives things an awful lot. You wonder if that'll have an effect.
It may. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are saying, how are you considered part-time even though they're pulling down six figures? I think people hear the number that Mac forced out of you. And just like anything, when it comes to a union and bosses, once you hear a certain amount of number, guys who make less than that start to have a trouble feeling sympathetic. But it's all comparative,
well,
right?
I mean, what is a full day's work? You work 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. Some guys work 20 hours a day and don't make the money that you make. It depends on the business you're in and what the business warrants and the kind of revenue that the business develops and has. The NFL makes a lot of money.
Yes.
It's a billion-dollar business.
I'm not saying this because you're sitting here with us, Jerry, but I would, anybody who questions that salary, there are 17, you just told us a little while ago, 17 referees in the NFL. These are the best in the world. I forever have been an advocate of the 32 head coaches making a ton of money. They should. You're at the top of your craft. There's no reason an NFL referee shouldn't be cashing in.
I agree. Yeah. 100%.
And if the business itself is making a preposterous amount,
no question,
it becomes
spread
different.
Some of it around, fellas. What's Goodell knocking down a year? $16 million? Is that what I read most recently? $16 million for Raj. He hugs the college draftees though, and everyone loves him. Jim is on the north side with Jerry Markbright on the score. Hello, Jim.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, Jim.
Listen, Jerry. Long time, respected for a long time, because I know you work Chicago Catholic League, Big Ten, NFL. What was the most fun you ever had? Catholic League, Big Ten, NFL, and who did you respect most as coaches in the Catholic League and Big Ten?
I enjoyed the cat. You sound like a Catholic League guy.
I think so.
Where'd you go to school?
He's gone.
He's gone already, Jerry.
Okay. I loved the Catholic League. It trained me to be a collegiate official. They had five officials in the Catholic League when the public league had three officials. They were way ahead of their day, and the games were great. And the coaches, my favorite coach of all time is Bill Parcells, who was the greatest. He treated the officials with the same respect that we treated him. He yelled and hollered, but when the game ended, it ended. And I still see him once in a while. I just give him a salute. He was that good.
Was there ever a more ornery, sometimes intimidating force than Woody Hayes? Because you did a lot of Big Ten games. You did a lot of Ohio State, Michigan games
yes.
as well.
Yes. I did 6 Ohio State, Michigan games in 11 years. I loved Woody Hayes. He did not love me. He and I were at odds most of the time, but he was a good man.
I got a couple more questions for Jerry, and I want to you got to do some of your mechanics for him. I want you to get judged.
The origin of the praying hands above the head.
Ah,
we'll get into some of that stuff.
Finally.
Yeah, we'll check a scoreboard, and we'll wrap it up with a few more thoughts with Jerry Markbright on the score. This hour of the McNeil and Spiegel Show is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. 11 o'clock hour. We're hoping to have a conversation with the veteran voice of White Sox baseball, Ed Farmer. The White Sox lost the series in Boston. I have completely forgotten about it during the first 32 minutes of this hour. Enjoying my conversation with my mishpuka, Jerry Markbright, good old number 9, the former NFL referee.
As you should, as you should. I wanted to ask Jerry what he thinks of some of the rules that have changed since you were actively reffing. We've got the force out now, but I really keep thinking about completing the process of the catch. Calvin Johnson against the Bears and some of these other things where you have to complete the process, and if the ball pops out when you yourself hit the ground, then it's not a full catch. What do you think about that evolution?
Let me tell you something about the rules. They make the rules so that it's easier for the fans to understand it and safer for the players. The officials, whatever the rule becomes, is the rule of the day. We learn that new rule, we put the old rule out, and that's it. We don't question the rules. The process of the catch makes it easier to officiate. Before, did he have control, didn't he? Now it's simple. The wording makes it easier to officiate because there are so many plays, as you all know, that are so close to one way or the other that they try to define them in the rules, and that's there haven't been that many major rule changes. The force out is one of the major ones.
Are you kind of glad that you don't have to deal with the hits, like trying to police blows to the head, which has changed drastically the way that is talked about, the way that is looked at, the scrutiny of a play that you have a millisecond to see, and then we watch 8 times in slow motion. You're supposed to get that right on the field. That's incredibly challenging for guys like
that. See, I saw it in slow motion. So it made it easy for me. But
yeah.
I loved those hits because I was tough. They didn't get away with anything on the quarterbacks. And they gave us more leeway. Now there are defined situations on it. And it's tough for the officials, but it's not any tougher than it was in the old days. They hit them harder in my day.
Yeah. Oh, he sounds just like the players. Sounds just like Obradovich and Buffon. It is so difficult. And, you know, one of the best hits I've seen in the last half a dozen years or so, Ryan Clark on Wes Welker a few years ago. When you see it live speed, it looks like every reason why you watch the game. But when it's slowed down, even though the contact on the upper half of Welker's, you know, on Welker is with the shoulders, he did leave his feet. How in the world do you expect guys to make this call in such a quick period of time?
It's very difficult.
That's got to be the hardest thing to do right now.
It's very difficult. You have to be lucky. You can't blink when that happens.
All right, guys, stand up. Mac, come on. What's the one that you think you do the best? Come on, stand up with me, McNeil.
What is the one that you feel proudest of?
It's
the easiest mechanic.
I'll hold
of
the
all
mic ref, for
just
you.
Just hold the referee.
Okay.
See, because, you know, Jerry and I were just talking about our glory days as high school players, and boy, that was a conversation we'll leave off
I'm
the air.
Glad I was on the other side of the table.
But as a nose guard, you don't get an opportunity to score any points. So the one you hope for is when the opponent is deep in its own end, and you beat the center and guard, and you get the quarterback, and you get the praying hands above the head.
Okay, what do you think of his form there, Jerry? Does he have it right?
It's the safety dance.
Excellent.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. I thought maybe those arms aren't too high
or too
low?
No, it's excellent. You can't put it up too high. It looks like a touchdown signal.
Okay. What's your favorite one? Come on, stand up, Jerry. I'll hold the mic for you. What's the one that you miss? Come on.
I'm too old to do that.
I'll still hold the mic. Do it sitting down if you want. But what's the one that you miss getting to do? Because there's got to be some that are satisfying. Personal foul, when you're chopping on your own forearm, that's got to be satisfying.
Well, I'll give it to you.
Okay.
Someone will hold this in my face.
Mac has it. The mic.
Personal foul, roughing the passer, number 75, 15-yard penalty, first down.
See, that's
exciting.
That's
good. Give it up for Jerry Markbright. You know, when we have you on next, We'll have Dave Miska rig up one of those clips for your belt, so that can be your microphone.
Get the wireless.
I thought he was bringing it.
I thought Jerry just walks around everywhere with it.
Last thing, Jerry, we want to run by, and we've had a few texters and a caller or two holding wanting to talk about the famous Charles Martin incident against Jim McMahon in 1986. For those of you younger listeners
that
don't remember
game?
It, Jerry had that.
It was my game.
Sure. That's why we bring it up. But Jerry had been in the league a long time. And that was your first ejection when you sent Charles Martin to the showers and Forrest Gregg had a fit with you. Take us down memory lane.
It was the biggest call of my entire 43-year career.
Hmm.
It was a play that I was lucky to be there. McMahon threw an incomplete pass, intercepted at the last second. The play was over. I was about to walk downfield, setting the play up for the going the other way, Green Bay, when I noticed a Green Bay man running toward McMahon. Mm-hmm. And I thought, something looks bad here. I better back up. I did. Martin grabbed him, turned him upside down, stuffed him head first into the ground. And I mean, he was out. Out. My flag hit the ground before McMahon did.
And that's how you said it, too, when you turned the microphone on. You said, stuffed him into the ground.
Right.
He stuffed him in the ground.
Right. When Martin got up off the ground, Jim Covert came from nowhere and ran into him from 20 yards away.
Bears.
The latest hit I'd ever seen in the NFL.
Wow.
I went for my flag, but it was already down. Then I said, I better throw my hat, but it was a muddy day, and I didn't want to ruin this hat. So I did nothing. My line judge flagged it. Mike Ditka stepped out on the field. He said, two flags, what does that mean? I said, offset, coach. He said, you got to be kidding. He said, my man may be dead. He said, you can't offset this. I said, you know the rule. He said, I'm going to give you the Ditka rule. He said, you offset that foul, you won't get home for dinner tonight.
Wow, that's amazing.
And Charles Martin had a hit list on his belt. He had the names of four Bears players, McMahon, Peyton, I think Hilgenberg was on the list, and was it Willie Gault who was the fourth? Now, that should be allowable?
No, but we didn't see that. You know, we see a towel. We're not looking at the writing on it. But here's when he got up on his feet, I grabbed him and I said, fella, you're out of the game. I'm ejecting you.
Mr. Fella.
He pulled away from me. He said, I'm not going anywhere with you.
Wow.
I said, if you don't come with me right now, I'm going to let the Bears kill you. He looked. He said, all right. I took him to the sideline, gave him to Forrest Gregg. I said, coach, this guy's out. Get him in the locker room. He said, what did he do? I went back to the locker. I went back to the middle of the field. Ditka was out there now. McMahon is sitting up. Ditka says, Jerry, I want to apologize for threatening you from the sideline. He said, whether you offset that foul or not, I'm going to see if you get home safely for dinner.
Nice.
He took care of you after all.
Jerry, it's a pleasure to have you here with us. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time today. Skokie's Jerry Markbright. McNeil and Spiegel back in a few minutes on the Score Sports Radio 670.